This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Thank you for joining us for our broadcast and online Main Street all across North Dakota. Tom Brosseau is a native North Dakota singer-songwriter who created and hosts the Great American Folk Show. It airs this Sunday at 5 Central on our radio network. The show will have a lineup of musical guests and a visit from the author of a book about working in the Bakken. Tom visited with Main Street's Ashley Thornburg to preview Sunday's show.
Tom, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Ashley. Thank you so much for having me back on the show.
What would you say is the golden thread that weaves the Great American Folk Show episode 11 all together?
Well, on the show, I'll just start by mentioning the guests. Quinn DeVoe, singer-songwriter who now lives in California, local artist from North Dakota, from Fargo, Sarah Moreau. We have a mother and daughter duo from Nashville, Tennessee, Nina Ricci and her mother, Teresa Ricci. And then Clinton Davis is on the program. He's originally from Kentucky. And he's not so much a songwriter as he is just, in general, a studier of folk music and bluegrass. And he can play pretty much any instrument, any stringed instrument, it seems. From the mandolin to the fiddle, the guitar, banjo, I'm sure he even plays the piano. Really talented guy. And then we have an author who's on the show, originally from the East Coast, I believe Baltimore. His name is Michael Patrick F. Smith, who has written a book called The Good Hand. But in addition to that, and before he became an author, he was a playwright and a folk musician and a songwriter and a guitar player. I would say that we're dealing with people who, in one way or another, have their hand to that great level of humanity, I would say the folk humanity, and that's what, as a result, that's what we'll be hearing, I think, reflected in their work, whether it's, you know, the string playing of Clinton Davis or the conversation that happens between Teresa Ricci and Nina Ricci on the program. I just think that the common thread, I suppose maybe what I'm saying is that it's heart. I think there's a lot of heart in this episode.
Yeah, I feel that. I would go with the word freedom, if I may be so bold, to put my own spin on it, both from the sense that Michael Patrick F. Smith's book excerpt, and he's reading from a very challenging time in his life and a moment in particular. We'll talk about this more, but a moment in particular where someone could easily have been very, very afraid, and he feels very, very free. And then you have Quinn DeVoe, who's doing a protest song, and he is yearning for freedom for people who don't have the same level of freedom as certain other people and their ability to move through this world. You have a mother-daughter team and this beautiful relationship that they have, very playful, the kind of freedom that sometimes mothers and daughters can only get after a little bit of time removed from one another. Mm-hmm. Not always. Yeah, so just a really a lovely episode coming up this weekend. I do want to really start with that focus on Quinn DeVoe. He is, after the Badlands segment, the first featured performer. And he talks in his monologue a lot about the importance of having a safety net during a time of pandemic. Take me back to when you first heard that monologue come in and the importance of the right people in your life.
It's interesting when these guests come on the show and I explain to them it's not anything that we're necessarily doing live. You know, the platform of the show is the guests who are on, they send in their monologues. They record themselves at home. And that has a certain tone to it. There's a certain relaxedness, I think, that comes with that. And so Me receiving these materials, if it's a musical guest, they'll send me 2 to 3 songs. Usually it's 2 songs, plus a monologue of some sort, and I give them the scope of what it is that I'm hoping. There has to be some sort of parameter. It's a family show. And so it's kind of difficult. Sometimes when I receive these materials, I'll listen to the monologue and I'll think, oh my gosh, this is so profound what this person is saying. I kind of want to savor that for a bit and before I go on to listen to their music. In Quinn's case, Quinn DeVoe, who is an extremely versatile songwriter. I mean, the record that he released last year is soul to the bone. It's really a beautiful record. And as I say on the show, it will really get you moving if you've heard this record of his called Book of Soul. His songs on the show are acoustic in nature and very folk. So when I first received, you know, his materials, the song that I listened to first of his was the one called Shot Down, which comments to unnecessary violence, unnecessary force. And I really couldn't, for the rest of the day, I just had to reflect on what it was that he was saying in his song, because it moved me so much. It was so powerful. And I'm very grateful that the guests that do come on the show do feel comfortable sharing their experiences. And that song is really, it really moved me. And so then it wasn't maybe, but maybe a week later that I listened to his monologue. And he's talking about connecting, about reaching out. You know, these monologues are sincere. I almost think that in Quinn's case, he has a microphone and he's just kind of like talking about something, obviously, that moves him. And going back to, you know, how we first started this conversation, I feel the heart. I feel the feelings that he's trying to relay in his message. It's hard to know how to reach out in over the course of this pandemic. And yet we need to, we must. I mean, it's in our nature to be social and to check in with one another. And, you know, it's been trying, I know, for a lot of people to figure out how they can do that.
You have North Dakota musician Sarah Moreau on your program. And as I understand it, you first heard of her through her mother. You're a fan of her mother, Barbara Crow, who is a poet and a longtime radio host, actually. People might remember her from Northern Lights Radio.
Yeah. You know, so Sarah's Facebook, this kind of all goes back to social media, is just really splendid web. You know, you can be friends with people who are friends with right. people that you know that you're not necessarily friends with. And I kind of got to know Sarah because of two reasons. One is my father had Sarah's records in his record collection. So I knew of her from that way, from that she's a local artist. And we've been so proud of, you know, to play local artists in our household. Growing up, and she was one
of them.
You've
got those mad hands going through your dad's cassette collection.
And I became friends with Sarah's father, actually, Jay, who was a doctor here in Grand Forks, North Dakota. I believe he's retired. And Jay was, from what I understand, a fan of some of my music. I had an album called Grand Forks that came out 15 or 16 years ago now. And so over the course of last year, the year before, I kind of struck up a conversation with Jay, and he was so proud of his kids, and he let me know about his family, and we talked a great deal about his daughter, Sarah, being in the arts. And then I was able to rediscover Sarah through getting to know her father through on social media, and that's when, you know, the bug was planted. I definitely have to have Sarah Moreau on the show. She's such a, we need people to be singing these songs from the Great American Songbook. And I think Sarah does that so incredibly well. The jazz songs that she sings. Mm. I mean, she does the song Blue Skies, which is like a staple jazz song. She'll be singing that on the program. And it's just so beautiful. And this record that we had in our collection at home called To Hold You from the early 2000s. Every song on it is a winner. It's just so lovely that we've got people out there like Sarah who are singing these songs. We need to hear these songs. These songs are incredibly poetic. We need to be reminded of the things that these songs are talking about love and about life. And we need great interpreters of those songs, and Sarah Moreau is one of them.
Well, let's talk about that interpretation. You're the musician here. Help me put a finer point on what I can't quite figure out on my own. What is it about her presentation, her voice, that makes these renditions so affecting?
It kind of goes back to a book that every writer should have, Elements of Style by Shrunk and White. And it kind of all goes back to what it is that they detail in this book, and basically what they get at in this book, this little handbook that every writer should have, is that you need just to develop your own style. And I see that those qualities in Sarah Moreau, that she could sing a lot more if she wanted to on these songs, or louder. But there's a reserve quality that she brings to the table that states each song simply. But at the same time, you feel the emotion in her voice. These are things that she feels as she's interpreting these songs. And of course, you know, her talent as a singer is just very fine. And I think some of that is learned, but I think some of that goes back to how we began this conversation again. It's just heart. She has heart and soul, and these are really vital things to be, you know, in touch with when you're doing any kind of art. You have to, you know, you have to be coming from those places for sure, the heart and soul.
Yeah, she is a longtime yoga teacher in the Fargo-Moorhead area, and I've taken a few of her classes, and I agree with that, bringing that heart, that authenticity to the class. She certainly, I've seen her personal practice, and I know she is capable of some really complicated, you know, sort of pretzely shapes, but the classes that she teaches tend to be very slow and very loving, and yeah, she brings that authenticity to that, too.
Yeah, thoughtful, and... You know, I'm not really a musician. I play the guitar, and I love to play. I'm a journeyman. But I know lots of really talented musicians. And what it is I admire about, you know, somebody like Sean Watkins, a friend of mine who plays guitar, is not how much he can play, but how little he can play. I mean, we already know that he can play anything in the world if he wants to.
If I had more time, I'd have written you a shorter letter, right?
Exactly, yeah. And
Speaking of writers, you have the writer Michael Patrick F. Smith. We've had him on Main Street. He has a memoir out about his time working in the Bakken, which I don't need to tell anybody is a very difficult line of work. And the excerpt that he reads from this book is a time when he's out in a terrible North Dakota weather kind of day. It's minus 20. And through lack of communication, the driver of the rig takes off without him. And he is alone in the dark in minus 20 degree weather. And I feel very much like I would have immediately started panicking in that situation. But he turns it around to this concept that is just very much freedom comes from within. Mm-hmm. And he chooses instead to focus on the stars and the natural world. And again, just that sense of freedom. Mm-hmm. It's the perspective that he brought to this, don't you think?
Oh, I for surely do. Yeah, I think a lot of people tuning in now, North Dakotans, know what it's like to be out in the cold weather for even a minute in a circumstance like that. It makes you very glad for central heating, that's for sure.
Yeah. I got cushy socks on and it's like 40 today.
Yeah,
not
I know.
20 below.
I'm wearing a big cardigan. you know, Michael Patrick F. Smith's book, The Good Hand, is very much the backdrop of that book. It's almost like a character. It's like the Baldwin books, the characters in his books, James Baldwin's books, are almost like the character is New York. And it's the same thing with you know, Michael Patrick F. Smith's memoir, at no point do you forget they are in, you know, western part of North Dakota. And be it very cold night, like he details in his, you know, this particular excerpt from his book on the show, or a really hot day or a windy day, you know, it is, I wouldn't call it in the middle of nowhere, because I think that has a connotation that is undesirable. The fact is, it is an incredibly beautiful place. It's one of my favorite places in the entire world. I've been all over traveling with music. It's the reason why I'm back in North Dakota, is because I just love it. I love that part. I love this part of our state. And I think when you're out in nature like that, it does something to you. You know, you forget about the elements for a second, and you forget about whether or not you have the grit to withstand the elements. I mean, the fact is, you are standing in the natural world now, and in this excerpt, he is alone by himself in nature, and I think that in itself is a really beautiful thing to rediscover as human. You know, I think we often lose track of that, perhaps, in our day-to-day, that we have our nature to connect with, or should connect with. And I think that's what he's doing, and I think that he finds real beauty in that experience, and that transcends the elements in a way.
I always like to think I'd be able to come face-to-face with a leopard or a jaguar and just, you know, look him in the eye and
have, like, a meaningful conversation.
Right, yeah. Yeah. I'd like to think so, but maybe I would run. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You have this delightful mother-daughter team that you talk about on the show, that you came across a video, and this person's style and delivery, Nina Ricci, just, you know, touched you, and you thought it was very charming. And then you reach out, and it turns out her mom, Teresa, is very involved in her life. And they're just, you know, there's an interplay. You can tell that they thought about what they were going to say, and they mm-hmm. wrote it out, and it's a little bit scripted, and just very, very cute, this relationship between a mother and daughter that sounds very natural. But as a mother of a, you know, an older child, you know, I know that natural relationship comes with a lot of work and a lot of give and take. Mm-hmm. What do you hear when you hear a conversation between parents who can be friends with their kids?
I wasn't surprised. I more or less just thought, well, this is really lovely that a mother and daughter are able to have this facet of a relationship. You know, it doesn't always work out having a relative be the manager of mm-hmm. a band, you know, or if it does, it works out just for a little while. And then, you know, in the best interest of, it's just good to move on to find yeah. like a disinterested party step in and to become yeah. that manager. But, you know, then I started to realize that the videos that Nina Ricci does have posted are likely shot by her mother. That perhaps even her mom is, you know, giving her advice, or is her audience when it comes to her songwriting, and maybe even when it comes to what she's wearing. And I think that is really a beautiful relationship, if it can exist. I'm not saying that it's not difficult. I think that it could be very difficult to have that relationship, but. Then I also feel very happy for them that they do have each other during the pandemic, because a lot of people can't be with their families mm-hmm. and they can't enjoy the day to day with a family member during the pandemic, and that's incredibly hard. You know, I feel like with Nina Ricci, it truly is a family affair, and I do feel like she's a very genuine person. And I do feel like she's not putting on any airs, but at the same mm-hmm. time, she's very aware of what she's doing, what she's trying to accomplish. And, you know, this is really important, I think, in an artist's career. I certainly didn't mean to focus on the fact, you know, that she was wearing a bolo tie and a hat. And I mean, I also look at that, you know, one's style, I think, is a total expression.
And I love people who can pull off hats.
I love that. In a bolo tie at the same time, I've tried to do it. You know, I'm not
right.
I'm not any good at doing the two.
No. What do they have? I don't get it.
Yeah. Years ago, when I was devoting a lot of my time to listening to Chris Isaak records, he had an interview with somebody saying that, you know, it's not like he takes off his stage attire when he's just hanging out at home. He's that person, like, around the clock. He's wearing what you would see him wear up on the stage. That's kind of who he is. All the time, glitter and glitz. And I guess I kind of get the feeling that that Nina is that way, too.
Yeah, meantime, all my clothes are just equal to or greater than the color of whatever I'm going to spill on them.
So right, beige.
Basically, to cover coffee stains, I got to just go with all black.
Yeah, so. Right, beige, dark beiges, browns,
right, yeah.
Blacks.
Everything matches.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of boring. last guest here I want to talk about is Clinton Davis, because he is talking so wonderfully about all of these instrumental songs, these fiddle songs, and I definitely am more of a word person. I like songs, mm-hmm. you know, that there are lyrics to, and I don't always have the patience to listen to a composition or something mm-hmm. that doesn't have words. How do you listen when there are no words to kind of tell you what you should be feeling?
Well, I think that's a really interesting point you bring up. I think, first of all, it takes a second to listen to instrumental banjo music and mandolin music and fiddle music. It's not like, you know, you're going to hear this for the first time and say, oh my God, that is my favorite music in the entire world. The banjo operates on a certain register that a lot of people find it difficult to listen to. And, you know, to a similar fashion, the mandolin, although I would argue that it's probably more palatable to listen to than the banjo. Whenever I'm listening to banjo music, my mom's around and she's always telling me to turn it down or off. But you eventually get used to it. And going back to what you're saying, and you see the beauty in it, and you see it as a form of communication, that you are into words, and you're into literature and poetry. And in Clinton's piece, when he's talking about instrumental music, he's saying that it's kind of one and the same thing, that there are flourishes and cliches in instrumental music that is like language. And that that in itself is on top of listening to it, if it's your thing to listen to, it's also a legitimate way to communicate, to remember. And that's kind of how I see instrumental music is it's another way to speak, you know, like a sonic wordsmith, Clinton Davis. And, you know, again, he's someone who doesn't write music. He's someone who interprets music. He's a songster. And, you know, in the same way that that Sarah Moreau is. And I think that they have similar sensibilities when it comes to their medium. And Clinton Davis is, you know, really a remarkable player, very remarkable player.
Tom, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me back on the program, Ashley.
Tom Brousseau, the host of the Great American Folk Show, in a conversation with our Ashley Thornburg. You can hear the show Sunday at 5 Central on this station. Coming up on Main Street, a recap of the week's headlines from news director Dave Thompson and a new movie review from Matt Olean. First, the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. As Congress debates the new $1.9 trillion COVID relief package, there are still some unknowns. North Dakota Senate Majority Leader Rich Wardner says he doesn't yet have final word about what North Dakota will receive. He says the latest estimate is the state will receive $1.05 billion.
We have an idea that some of it has to go to counties and cities, about 350, and we, you know, that's been laid out for us. But that may change.
Wardner says earlier the state was expecting to get anywhere between $3 billion and $5 billion based on per capita. But he says it's now being based on unemployment. Wardner says the thought was to use about $1 billion of that to shore up retirement plans, but that's not happening.
So now when that money comes, we got to make sure that we invest it into one-time things and into things that are going to make a difference in the state. We cannot put it into ongoing spending.
Wardner says schools will be receiving a separate stream of money from the COVID relief plan.
We don't know the exact numbers yet, but we have an idea. And we know that education is going to be well taken care of. There's some things we won't have to fund this time that we would have because of the COVID dollars.
Wardner says if the bill passes in the next few days, the legislature will be able to deal it while it is in the regular session. The state health department has confirmed 95 new individuals from 23 counties as having tested positive for COVID-19 statewide. Today's results are from a pool of 6,673 tests for a daily positive rate of 1.94%. There are currently 666 active confirmed cases statewide. 19 new cases were found in Ward County, 13 in Cass County, and 12 in Burley County. A detailed breakdown of all new cases from each county is posted on our news page at news.prairiepublic.org. 22 people are currently hospitalized due to COVID-19, and since yesterday, 90 people have recovered. And Grand Forks County could see their mask mandate come off the books as soon as Monday. County Health Officer Dr. Joel Walls says with COVID cases falling, he will likely rescind the health order next week. Walls says the decision is tied to changing metrics based on the Grand Forks Health Dashboard.
You know, driving force here to guide some decision making, and we've seen some really nice trends down here, and here we, you know, started to find green. Didn't think we'd see green for a long time, and thought we'd give it 14 days if we stay in green. Still a good idea to wear the mask for a lot of people, but maybe we don't need the public health officer's order.
Dr. Walls signed the health order January 18th to coincide with the expiration of the statewide mandate. At the time, Walls stated it was a simple and critical tool in helping protect the community and slowing the spread of COVID-19. Walls says masks do work, and he still recommends their use as COVID-19 is still in the community. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
That old wire machine in the background means it's time to talk about the news of the week with our news director, Dave Thompson. And Dave, the state made history on Friday.
Yes, it did, with the expulsion of Representative Simons from the House. That has not happened in North Dakota before.
Wow. The state's been around since 1889, and for the first time, they expel a member of the House, and it was for a pretty interesting reason, considering how long it was simmering.
Exactly. So the complaints go back to 2017, apparently, that Representative Simons was accused by several people of, you know, being inappropriate, doing some inappropriate touching of hair, and using language and threats and intimidation, especially against women, not only in the legislature, but in the legislative council, which is the research arm.
And, of course, he'd been counseled not to do that by leadership. He'd been counseled not to do that by members of the women that he had offended.
That is correct, yes.
And kind of didn't take the hint, apparently.
Apparently not. And as Chet Pollard, the House Majority Leader, said on the floor, I've been talking to him. We've all been talking to him about his behavior, and it just came to a head.
And then I was intrigued by the debate on the floor as the Committee of the Whole met in the House chamber to debate this. And I found it an interesting discussion, particularly for those people who had felt wronged by Representative Luke Simons. But the defense of him was a bit tepid.
It was a process argument rather than a defense of any kind of behavior. He said the people who spoke against the expulsion amendment said what we need to do is do a thorough investigation and give Representative Simons his due process rights, which was an interesting argument. And at the end of the day, it fell on deaf ears because more than two-thirds voted to expel him.
Yeah, and that investigation implies something more than the he says, she says circumstance that usually surrounds this kind of accusation, although in this case, many people had witnessed it. And it wasn't a case of he says, she says. It was a case of he says, she says, she says, she says, she says, she says.
Yeah, that's the way it kind of unfolded. And to the end, Representative Simons was maintaining not necessarily his innocence, but he was maintaining that, you know, he's gone through counseling, he's trying to do better, et cetera. But he needs the opportunities, what he said, to cross-examine some of these people. And the implication there, and you see it on Representative Simons' Facebook page, is that this was a political witch hunt. It was basically rhinos, Republicans in name only, and some liberals who were trying to get rid of him. In the end, if you take a look at the vote, that's not the case.
Yeah. I was intrigued because I got to watch this and witness it. That television feed from the Capitol is great.
It is. It's absolutely wonderful. And I don't know if you watched it online or you watched, I think Beck Communications had it on its over-the-air signals too.
Well, I watched it online from, a couple hundred miles away, and it was very interesting. Now, the question is, I went up on the website, the legislative website, and looked at the list of members of the House, and now it says under Luke Simons, expelled.
Yes.
What does that mean? Did he turn in his keys?
After the vote was taken, he did clean his desk, and he left. He went back to Dickinson. Last night, the name Simons was off the voting board, and this morning, the name was off his desk.
And now,
so, he is expelled.
And now District 36 apparently will have to pick some successor for him.
Right, and my intel told me this morning that there's going to be a meeting of the executive committee in District 36 sometime this weekend in Dickinson, and they may have a name or two to bring forward at that time.
I was intrigued also, Dave, that the new president of your alma mater, Andrew Armacost, had kind of weighed in on the Luke Simons issue earlier in the week because one of those interns was a UND student that he had allegedly harassed.
Right.
And the next day, we find out that UND is facing a federal lawsuit for fostering a culture of silence around sexual misconduct reports.
Right. And in the UND case, the person who was accused of it actually did lose his job. But the lawsuit, I think, goes further than that and says UND had a climate that created those instances of harassment.
Yeah. Well, more to come there, of course.
I think that'll be interesting to watch.
Well, the other thing we're watching with great interest right now is happening in Washington. That's the debate in the Senate over the COVID-19 relief bill. It's a great big one. It's $1.9 trillion, and the Senate is where the crucial vote's going to take place.
That's exactly right. The Senate will take up, and we're expecting it maybe sometime this weekend, the Senate will vote. And once that vote happens, then it's going to be kind of a cascade to get the House to agree with any changes, and then they'll get the money out as soon as they can. The good news for the North Dakota legislature is that the legislature will still be in session, so if they know what the state is going to receive from that federal COVID package, then they can deal with it in their budget sessions. Now, there's still some uncertainty about how much North Dakota is going to receive. At one point, Doug, they were talking about $4 billion, and we're going to use about $1 billion of that to help the unfunded mandate, the unfunded portion of the state retirement fund for state employees. But now it looks like maybe the figure is going to be about $1 or $1.05 billion. So there are going to be some other things that will have to be done with that. Now, talking to Senate Majority Leader Rich Wardner this morning, he said that what they're looking for is one-time spending, and they know that a good share of that money, probably about a third of the money, will be going back to local governments, cities and counties.
Well, the interesting thing, I think, about this relief bill for the state of North Dakota and for the states in general is that there is sort of this government funding that everybody's been looking for.
Exactly. But now how is it going to be given to the states? There was the thing that if you did the per capita basis, North Dakota would do, you know, $3 to $4 billion. But apparently the formula is going to be based on a state's unemployment rate.
Oh.
And North Dakota, because our unemployment rate is low and remains very low compared to other states, we're not going to get as much money as we thought.
Well, meanwhile, we passed a milestone in COVID confirmed cases. Danielle Webster in our newsroom reported earlier this week that the state has now gone by 100,000 confirmed COVID cases.
I know that, and just began about a year ago. You know, so really, I think Minnesota Today was reporting its first case of COVID last year at this same date.
Wow.
So
how things
you
have
think
changed.
About how things really have changed, and it shows you how contagious that thing is, number one. Number two, look at how far we've come in a year, because, you know, you've had a number of deaths. We've had 1,400-plus deaths in North Dakota, but you now have three COVID vaccines that will be available.
And those vaccines, interestingly enough, another story from Danielle is that we have received X amount of doses and given out more than that X amount of doses. That's really fascinating.
It is fascinating because, you know, the vials, the way I understand it, each vial has five doses. Now they're discovering that actually each vial contains six doses.
Well, let's talk about another issue that's in the legislature that everybody's kind of interested in terms of their infrastructure interests, and that's bonding. Mm-hmm. And you had a story earlier this week about Senator Brad Beckedahl, who is a proponent of bonding, and he says he wants to see a bigger number.
Yes, he does. The $680 million coming from the House is really specifically geared toward water projects, the Fargo-Moorhead diversion and Minot flood control, for example. Now, Brad Beckedahl in the Senate wants a bit bigger bond bill, and part of the reason is the money is pretty cheap right now. You know, to borrow money is actually cheaper than the rate of inflation. So they're saying, we've got some projects, we have some infrastructure needs that need to be done, and if you wait until you pay for them, well, it's not going to be as good because costs keep going up.
Yeah. And the interest rates, as you mentioned, are low, almost historically low, but
yes,
they're going up. And so strike while the iron's hot, I guess, is
right,
what he's after.
Right, and that's the concern. There is some concern, and people are watching this very carefully. They'd like to get a bonding bill out, signed, sealed, and delivered before the legislature adjourns, if possible.
Dave, I know this is the crossover week. I mean,
people
are back talking about stuff, and the marijuana bill is still alive, right?
It is still alive, and this is the one that was introduced by Bismarck Representative Jason Doctor, and it would allow adults to have and to use a certain amount of marijuana. What the hitch in the giddy-up might be is that the bill only allows the compassion centers set up for medical marijuana to sell the product. And it only allows for the two grow centers to actually grow the product. It's not allowing a person to put marijuana plants in your garden. That's not going to happen under this bill. Now, there is some concern because can they keep up with the demand?
Yeah.
And I know that's going to be an interesting question going forward. And it's not to say the grow centers are not doing what they can. And maybe they're going to have to expand. Who knows?
Well, we'll find out. This is an interesting wrinkle.
Oh, good, isn't it?
Who's your legislative review guest?
State Senator Erin Oban, a Democrat from Bismarck, she's the assistant leader in the Senate, and she has a real good handle on some of the things like bonding and like the marijuana bill that we just talked about.
And when will this air?
This will air at 6:30 p.m. tonight on radio, but it will be available with video on our basic platforms, you know, YouTube and our websites and our Facebook pages.
We check in with our news director, Dave Thompson, every Friday. Always a pleasure, Dave.
Thank you, Doug.
There I was on the Dog and Bone with me mate, Charlie. When my trouble and strife took a tumble on the apples and pears, I couldn't Adam and Eve it.
Are you holding your mouth wrong? Or
one hand washes the other, and both hands wash the face.
Join us this week on Away With Words.
I'll help you, you help me, but we're working for the boss.
That's Away With Words, Saturday at 9 Central, 8 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
A gift of the pandemic, new words for German speakers.
Mundschutzmode. Okay, so that's one of these long compounds where you have Mund for mouth, Schutz for protection, and Mode as a term for fashion. So a literal translation would be mouth protection fashion.
N95 sounds so drab by contrast. Listen for that and all the week's news, Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
7 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
It's time to go to the movies with Matt Olien. And Matt, this week you're going to talk about a movie I haven't heard anything about from a far distant land.
Yeah, from Macedonia. The film is called Willow, directed by Milcho Manchevski. Manchevski is the director of a film called Before the Rain, which was nominated in 1994 for the Foreign Language Film Oscar. And that was a film about three different stories interwoven about the Civil War in Macedonia. And he is a New York-based filmmaker, but he makes films basically about his homeland of Macedonia. This is making its way through the festival circuit right now and looking for wider release, so keep your eye out for this one. But I was able to see it, and that was very exciting to see this movie because I've liked his past work as well. What he really is good at is giving you a slice of life of Macedonia, which is a country most people don't know much about. It's over by Albania and Bulgaria and places like that. But they do have a very robust film industry. And just like with his film Before the Rain, this film, again, has three intertwined stories, all of women in Macedonia who are dealing with motherhood, pregnancy, reproductive rights of their bodies. So very interesting how he ties these three stories together. One of the women, Dunka, her story is set in medieval times, kind of medieval Macedonia, and there's a lot of things that are talked about in terms of what they should do to conceive a child, her and her husband, things they must follow, praying to the gods for this and that. A lot of superstitions back then, and that's really the focus of that first story. Then eventually we slip into the second story, which is a modern story of a woman called Radna who meets a taxi driver, and they become involved and conceive twins. But what happens from there is very interesting in terms of how they see this very differently, because they have to make a very, very difficult choice about her pregnancy. And then finally, the third story also is a modern woman in Macedonia who adopts a child, and that becomes very trying for her. But what I liked about the movie is it tries to tie all these stories together, Doug, in a way that gives you a sense of what it is like to be a mother, both in medieval times and modern times. No matter what country we may be talking about, these stories could be very, very similar to stories in the United States or Western Europe or Russia or wherever, dealing with motherhood and the difficulty and the joys of motherhood. So I like this movie a lot. Kind of starts a little slow once you kind of get used to it and where it's going. Then it picks up a little bit for me. But again, Milcho Manchevski has this wonderful touch of taking you to a place that we're not familiar with and dealing with local customs, local superstitions that even go these superstitions, Doug, what's interesting about the tying of the stories together is these superstitions and ways of living translate from medieval times to modern times. Maybe not quite as much, but we still see religion, Doug, popping into how people view conceiving children, raising children, superstitions, ways to do things that'll make you lucky with getting children, things like that. So a fascinating movie, three different stories, and I like this one a lot.
Well, you got a screener. How the rest of us are going to see this movie?
So, Doug, the film has been released in Macedonia, and it is currently the official selection from Macedonia for the International Feature Film Oscar for this year's Oscars. We'll know the five official nominees in March, so it is the official submission from that country, and it's also making its way through the film festival circuit, but still looking for that U.S. release.
It's a reminder that the foreign film industry is
big, as you mentioned, even in Macedonia, and it's getting attention outside of their own boundaries, especially in our country, where we seem to have been focused for most of my life on Hollywood. So this is an interesting expansion of our awareness, if you will. But that gets me to my mm-hmm. Oscar trivia question this week, which is the 2020 Oscars, the mm-hmm. first sort of pre-pandemic emergency Oscars, or the last one, I should say. What was the best picture at the 2020 Academy Awards?
So that was Parasite from South Korea,
yeah.
which became the first foreign language movie ever to win Best Picture.
And Best Director?
Bong Joon-ho, is that how I pronounce
that's
his
the,
name?
It's the director of Parasite. That's how I guess I would describe
Parasite.
It.
Parasite, yes. It was a big night for him.
And it was a big night for the best actor, too. Who was that?
Oh, you're gonna put me on the spot for last year. Joaquin Phoenix for Joker. There it is.
You that's know, right.
It's easier to remember the older years than the previous year sometimes.
Okay, that means I've got one more question. Best actress.
Okay. Oh, best actress last year. Oof, you're putting me on the spot here.
What? She sang up a storm.
sang up a storm. Boy, I'm just blanking here, Doug, for some reason, because it's such
it
only
was
last
Renee
year.
Zellweger for
of
Judy.
Course. I'm sorry, yes. Of course.
Well,
sorry,
for
folks.
Heaven's sakes. Yeah, well, I think that encyclopedic memory is marvelous and
okay.
It's amazing you remember that stuff. Let's remember somebody else here, and that is a friend to both you and me who left us too early. And he was a filmmaker in our midst. He was with the film program at Minnesota State University Moorhead for many years, and he will be sorely missed, and that's Tom Brandau.
Yeah, what a sad story, because he was very private about what he was going through with his illness. But it was he fought bravely through it, and Tom was a good friend. I used to watch movies with him and discuss movies. Listeners of this program will remember he often came in to talk about the Library of Congress movies that had been preserved. He was very good at that. He really had a great knowledge of old films and preservation of films, much like Rusty Castleton did, who hired Tom in 2004. He was a great filmmaker, too. He made quite a few short films that really had a nice touch. He has a nice special touch to his movies, a kind of a gentle touch. He also made a feature film called Cold Harbor. And I did a story on Tom about 9 years ago for Minnesota Artist Profile, and I'll never forget the soundbite in the story that I used, and that was feature filmmaking isn't for sissies. And he talked about how difficult it is to make a feature film. You're in control of everything. Art direction, cinematography, the acting, the screenplay. It's expensive. And if one of those things doesn't go right, you're responsible as the director. So, yeah, I'm going to miss Tom a lot. Good friend. He had a brave fight, and he's going to miss. What was amazing, Doug, was the Facebook reaction when he passed away.
Yeah.
So many students talked about how great he was in the classroom, how good of a listener he was. He encouraged them to make film projects, even if he thought the project maybe wasn't quite what he would do. So a lot of great remembrances from his students.
Well, he was an artist, he was a teacher, and as you mentioned, he was a great guy.
Yes,
Tom Brandau's gone. We've been to the movies with Matt Olien.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Support for Dakota Datebook is provided by Books on Broadway and Dakota Soda and Coffee Company of Williston, featuring coffees and a wide variety of books for children and adults. Books on Broadway, the independent bookstore for independent minds.
This is Dakota Datebook for March 5th. Nearly 40 million acres of land are devoted to ranching and farming in North Dakota. Cattle outnumber people by more than 2 to 1. North Dakota has earned a reputation for quality agricultural products, including beans, honey, flaxseed, sugar beets, and sunflower seeds. Soybeans and wheat are the leading crops.
The thick black loam of the Red River Valley ranks among the richest agricultural land in the world. The state's motto, Strength from the Soil, recognizes the role that agriculture plays in the state's economy. Among the agricultural products found in the state, perhaps potatoes are somewhat overlooked. On this date in 1904, an article in the Washburn Leader urged farmers to pay closer attention to the humble potato. According to the newspaper, there is no locality on earth where more or better potatoes can be raised than right here in North Dakota. The newspaper felt that the state's potato crop had fallen into neglect. A few years prior, no inspection of a potato crop was necessary since the label, grown in North Dakota, was enough to guarantee quality. But that was no longer the case. Potatoes were too likely to be affected by rot and might be stringy and tasteless. The newspaper blamed the deterioration on carelessness. Farmers didn't exercise enough care in choosing their seed potatoes. They also planted different varieties in the same field. This resulted in a jumbled harvest, with different types of potatoes mixed together. One more problem was the potato beetle. Farmers were urged to be proactive and take preventative measures to protect their crop. The Red River Valley is particularly good for potatoes. At one time, the valley was under Lake Agassiz, a glacial lake even bigger than the Great Lakes. It left behind a rich layer of silt, clay, and sand. It may come as a surprise that North Dakota has become one of the country's major potato-growing states. In 2020, potatoes accounted for over $200 million of income. Today's Dakota Datebook is written by Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Here's how neuroscientist Kimberly Noble explains her research to her own child.
We are trying to understand if helping kids' families by giving them more money is going to make it easier for them to do well in school and in life.
Ideas on healthy brain development at every stage of life. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Sunday at noon, 11 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
Prairie Public is here to help you in the 2020-21 school year. PBS Learning Media has thousands of curated, standards-aligned videos, interactives, lesson plans, and more. Easily searchable by grade level and discipline. And it's all free. Find it at prairiepublic.org/education.
Thank you for joining us today for Main Street. As we broadcast, you know we stream online at prairiepublic.org. And you may also know that after the broadcast or stream, you can find any Main Street show right there at prairiepublic.org. Monday on our show, we'll talk about Hudson Bay Bound. It's a new book from author, adventurer, and outdoor educator Natalie Warren. Her book chronicles a 2,000-mile adventure in a canoe. And state climatologist Adnan Acuse will have an update on conditions in North Dakota. There is increased concern about drought. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Monday, and we hope you'll check out Main Street Weekend Sunday morning at 10 Central. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.